are keeping their own observations. It's just fun to see it grow, but that's, so much that comes from you guys. So thank you.
Well, I've got another book for you. So we had Sam Guida on a couple of
Yes.
2 weeks ago and talked about burrs and galls and brooms, brushes, and I've picked up several copies of his book, and I have one with your name on it. So I'll get it off to you soon, and you can explore a new area. At
I
least
love
new
that.
for me. Yeah, I do too. Pretty excited. Thanks again for joining us this morning, Chad. What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a great day. He's headed to his classroom, no doubt, and is going to be
Yep.
teaching phonology today. That's Chad Kadetz. And hopefully next week we'll be getting another report. And as students kind of settle into getting back to school after the holiday.
Good times.
The two of you are just making me cry, I'm
Oh
telling you.
man, it just it's so touching when you talk to someone who's as committed as Chad and the things that he's doing for his students. It's just astonishing. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at kaxe.org.
We do have a chance of freezing rain early today, dense freezing fog and reduced visibility. Take it slow on the roads. Mostly cloudy tonight or during the day today, 25 to 30 degrees, and we'll have fog and clouds again tonight, 14 to 18. By tomorrow, Wednesday, patchy fog, mostly cloudy, then becoming sunny, highs 35 to 37 degrees.
If it's dense freezing fog, then it will be rime that you will be seeing on the trees this morning,
Not hoarfrost.
not hoarfrost. If
Okay.
it's sublimation of moisture without winds and clouds, then it's hoarfrost. So get out and have a look at it. Let's see. Rime tends to be denser and somewhat spiky, and it is more durable than hoarfrost.
Okay.
So.
Keep looking, keep watching. Coming up, we've got local news with the Up North Report. We're getting more on the announcement yesterday from Governor Tim Walz that he won't be seeking re-election.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Governor Tim Walz is ending his campaign for an unprecedented third term. The DFLer made the announcement Monday amid mounting pressure from members of his own party and intense attacks from Republicans over widespread fraud in state-run social services programs. Walz hosted a press conference Monday morning where he read nearly the same statement that had been shared with media earlier in the day. Here he is in Kara Levin's recording.
Every minute that I spend defending my own political interest would be a minute I can't spend defending the people of Minnesota against the criminals who prey on our generosity and the cynics who want to prey on our differences.
Walz did not take any questions. The Minnesota Reformer reports a source close to Senator Amy Klobuchar says she is seriously considering running for governor. Secretary of State Steve Simon and Attorney General Keith Ellison's names are also being floated once again for the DFL. Both are running for re-election, but were considered possible candidates before Walz announced his campaign. A slew of Republicans have already entered the race, including House Speaker Lisa Damith, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, failed GOP gubernatorial candidate Scott Jensen, and former congressional candidate Kendall Qualls. Republican State Representative Peggy Bennett of Albert Lea also recently threw her hat in the ring. The retired educator and six-term legislator says she doesn't like politics, but she does like serving people.
I'm entering this race because I believe I'm different. I know I will be an effective leader and I can get things done for this state.
Her campaign platform focuses on affordable housing and health care, public safety, and education. Former Iron Range teacher Ryan Ross Denzer Johnson was sentenced to 18 years in prison Monday for two counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct. The 44-year-old pleaded guilty in November. He sexually assaulted an adolescent relative between March 2023 and July 2024. Prosecutors argued for and got the maximum sentence. They say Denzer Johnson abused his position of trust with the victim. They also note that he appeared to know for some time that he had inappropriate feelings for minor females, but continued to serve in youth ministry and as a teacher. In Minnesota, offenders typically serve two-thirds of a sentence in prison and spend the rest of the time on supervised parole. 8 Northland housing projects are among the 51 selected for Minnesota housing financing. The agency announced its annual selections in mid-December. The Hibbing Housing and Redevelopment Authority will build a 48-unit apartment building to replace the blighted Haven Court. The project, called Misabe Manor, will be built alongside Cobb Cook Place. 3 community land trust projects were also selected. The affordable housing model means buyers own the home, but an organization owns the land itself. The Itasca County HRA will build 8 more land trust homes on the former Forest Lake School site. Nonprofit North Star Neighbors will build 6 land trust homes in Bemidji and Warren. And nonprofit One Roof Community Homes will buy and renovate 10 homes to add to its land trust program in and around Duluth. Tribal housing projects from the Red Lake and White Earth Nations were also selected, and the North St. Louis Habitat for Humanity was awarded funds to put toward 8 new homes. Nearly $200 million in funding for rural health is coming to Minnesota. The money is part of the 5-year, $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program created by the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Every state got some money in the first year of the program, but the Minnesota Department of Health says it got significant additional funding because of its innovative plan. The agency will use the funds for telehealth and expanding the rural healthcare workforce, among other initiatives. MDH requested $1 billion over the next 5 years. The federal program was created to offset the anticipated cost of Medicaid cuts to rural health care, though health care officials question whether it will be enough. The state says it will continue to work with stakeholders as it implements the program. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
It is 7:07. Coming up, we'll have more news, national news. We're learning about coverage this morning is a lot about Venezuela. And the next story is about how gold, like oil, is crucial for Venezuela's government. Stay tuned for that story. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
We receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More info at klockowbrewing.com.
We're seeing fog and mist around the region. Looks like a little snow is coming down in Aiken right now at 25 degrees there, 24 in Bemidji, 23 in Hibbing. Looks like Brainerd at 27 this morning. McGregor reporting 26. And Virginia, currently at 23 degrees.
We receive support from Buckhorn on Caribou Lake, featuring 5 handcrafted log cabins in the Chippewa National Forest just north of Grand Rapids, accommodating families and large groups or weekend getaways for couples. Rates and information at buckhornoncaribou.com.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. We've heard a lot in recent days about Venezuela's oil. The country has another resource, gold. Years ago, CNN reported that the country was increasingly relying on gold to prop up its economy. CNN international correspondent Isa Suarez was part of that investigation, and she's on the line. Good morning.
Very good morning to you, Steve.
I got to admit, this is a really cool story. It makes me think of like the earliest times of Venezuela, Spanish colonialism, the Spanish Main. Yeah. Is this like a big, old, historic industry?
It is indeed. It's been, I mean, especially where I went to, we went to El Callao, and this is in the Orinoco Belt. And it's traditionally that is the height of where a lot of the gold has been sourced for many, many years. So that area is not new, but it's you know, an El Dorado. It has been an El Dorado for Nicolas Maduro for many, many years. I went to El Callao. I think it's been ongoing, you know, the mining industry there since kind of the early, kind of mid-19th century.
Okay.
And that area, Stephen, has substantial gold deposits, part of course, to the geology.
And how important has that gold become to the Venezuelan economy as it has otherwise fallen apart?
Look, what we have seen, and you will no doubt would have reported on this, right? Venezuela has, as your listeners will know, 300 billion barrels in proven oil reserves, but they actually only produce less than a million a day.
Yeah.
And so over the years, with the infrastructure and under poor management of Chavez and Maduro, they've relied heavily on gold. And back in 2018, Maduro basically announced a gold plan, Steve, that would allow Venezuela to profit something like, I think the plan was like $5 billion annually. To try and he said it sold in such a way as to strengthen our reserves, bring foreign investors. But what we have seen, and that's why we were there on the ground to try and follow the money. How is it? It's what we keep asking ourselves. How is it that Nicolas Maduro has been able to stay in power for so long? And this speaks to that. It is a question of the military around him. You had mentioned just before the break, the defense minister, as well as the interior minister, Diosdado Cabello, Vladimir Padrino. They are really the tumor behind this whole enterprise. You remove the head, but the tumor's still there. They run this operation via Pranes. He's a military gang, so we've seen the impact these have had on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they command the entire structure, and that goes all the way to the top.
Let me make sure I understand this. You have a country with an almost worthless currency. It has a lot of oil, but not very much really being pumped. Are you saying that it is gold that the government is using to pay troops, pay security forces, keep the government together, and maybe collect a little bit for themselves?
Oh, without a doubt. For many, many years, that's exactly what they've been doing. This is not just me. This is military sources. This is many people in the government I've been speaking to. They have been using gold to funnel. The U.S. itself has said this. You know, they've actually put sanctions on Venezuelan gold as well. And we have tracked the money. You know, I was speaking when I was there to a source of the Venezuelan Central Bank, and he was saying to me that at the end of April of that year, that they had 26 tons of gold, Steve, taken out of the bank. And that was packed into private planes, and destination, by the way, Middle East and Africa.
Oh.
That's roughly, just for listeners, is $1.6 billion. All of it skirting U.S. sanctions. And these shipments, by the way, they were going by the UAE, we track this, but via Uganda on a Russian plane in exchange for euros. This is a criminal enterprise that has pretty much hijacked all of the state's institutions to work for their service. And this is why when we ask ourselves in 2019, why didn't Guaido manage, of course, following the protests, following the support between Juan Guaido, why is it that Maduro has been able to stay in power? It's because this military, this enterprise has been funneling and keeping them going for so long, obviously enriching the pockets of the military and those at the very top of the food chain.
Amazing reporting, and I suppose that'll be one question to ask in the days ahead, whether that trade can continue. Isa Suarez, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
She's with CNN International.
The weight loss medication Wegovy is now available as a pill. The starting doses arrived at pharmacies across the country on Monday. Higher doses will ship out by the end of the week. NPR Pharmaceuticals correspondent Sydney Lupkin reports on how it works and how much it will cost.
Patients can now fill their prescriptions for a pill version of Wegovy. It contains the same active ingredient as the blockbuster injectable form of the drug, semaglutide. It's also similar to the Wegovy shot when it comes to safety and effectiveness. But patients have to take the daily pill on an empty stomach and wait half an hour before eating anything else for it to be properly absorbed. Here's Dr. Scott Isaacs, the past president of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology.
I am very careful to talk to my patients and make sure they understand that this is a medication that needs to be taken exactly as directed. And if it's not taken correctly, it may not work at all. It may be just a very expensive placebo.
He says even a little coffee could make the Wegovy pill less effective. Affordability has been the greatest barrier for patients, however. For patients not using their health insurance, the cash price available from Novo Nordisk is $149 a month for the starting dose and $299 a month for the higher doses. The price that affects insurance coverage, called a list price, is the same as the Wegovy injection, around $1,400 a month. Novo Nordisk says people with insurance could have copays as low as $25 a month. But insurance company coverage for weight loss drugs got more restrictive in 2025. That's according to a recent analysis by GoodRx, a website that helps patients find discounts on prescription drugs. The Food and Drug Administration approved the Wegovy pill on December 22nd. A competing obesity pill made by Eli Lilly is expected to win approval this year. Sydney Lupkin, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
It's 7:16. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, we'll have full Phenology here on People Powered, KEXE. Again, a mix of national news, local conversations, information about things going on in your community. Coming up this Thursday, Itasca Waters continues their Practical Water Wisdom series. It's a free webinar series once a month. It'll be at noon. This month, Traditional Ecological Knowledge with Shane Bowe. He's Water Resources Director for the Red Lake Nation, DNR. You can register at itascawaters.org.
We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families, homeschool, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
Friday night, Curl Misabi invites you to Burger Night from 5:30 to 8. It's at the Eveleth Curling Club. It's a chance to learn the sport in a welcoming environment. Be sure to bring in clean athletic shoes and wear comfortable clothing.
Absolutely. Stretchy pants. Don't wear corduroy.
I don't know why. I've just never expected to hear stretchy pants.
Well,
come out of your mouth.
I've been curling for 50 years now, and I started I probably wore corduroys a time or two, and probably split them from the hiney all the way down to the knee. And I did curl for a while in loose fitting denim pants, but they also are constricting. If you've watched curling on television, you see that the person delivering the stone puts themselves in a rather stretched out position. Mm-hmm. And some fabrics just aren't made to do that. And especially when you put them on a body, if they fit snugly and they don't have any give in them, like corduroy, they're not going to hold up. You're going to find yourself exposed. So wear clean underwear, as my mother would say.
Stretchy pants. That's the advice for today.
Yep. Clean shoes and stretchy pants. You'll be happy.
We do have a chance of freezing rain. Hope you're taking it easy on the roads this morning. Dense freezing fog, reduced visibility, mostly cloudy skies tonight with highs 25 to 30. Northwest winds 5 to 15. And then tonight, 14 to 18, looking like 35 to 37. More fog tomorrow, but we should see some sun. Overnight temperatures in the low 20s. And we're looking at highs in the mid 30s and partly sunny by Thursday. We'll have Phenology coming up next, and we've got a couple of texts that came in, too, to tell you about.
Good. We'll chat on those as the morning goes along. By all means, if you have observations you'd like to share, as I'm fond of saying, please send them along. You know, all Phenology is local. What happens in your yard may not be happening in my yard. And so, if you have something to share of a natural nature, why, send it along. I'd love to hear from you. Do you rely on KAXE? Are you at least 70 and a half years old? Supporting KAXE's future is easy. Ask your financial advisor to set up charitable IRA distributions to KAXE. Questions? You can call Chris at 218-326-1234. And that's something that I do. I have a savings account, and every year they ask me to make a required distribution. I have to take out some money each year. And so I just set aside some of that, and it goes to KAXE. And the nice thing is that if I take the money for myself, I've got to pay taxes on it. But if I take the money and give it to KAXE, I don't. Huh. So it's a pretty good deal. I can take the whole amount and just shove it right into KAXE, and you can tell that I'm that my bankroll isn't that big, or KAXE would have lots better, I don't know, food in the
company
in the
cars,
kitchen. Company,
you know.
Cars, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
If only I had, what is it? Not Bill Bezos, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
If I had his money, my required minimum distribution would be, you know, enough to probably finance the station for 25 years. But that wasn't me. I made poor decisions in my youth. Decided not to become a Amazon entrepreneur.
Oh, sure. Well, we appreciate
it's all my
that
fault.
You did not.
Yeah, Don. Well.
Thank you for not doing that.
I might not have been able to do this if I had done that.
Right.
I guess we all make choices.
Yeah. Coming up, Phenology.
It's time for Phenology. The Phenology show is about the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Wow, I haven't fumbled the intro in forever. You give me a week off and I forget everything. But I haven't forgotten that Phenology is still about what's happening in your yard right now. And we are moving into the month of January, and oftentimes for phenologists, this is like vacation time. There's not a lot going on. There aren't a lot of new things happening. There is the daily inventory of the birds that show up at my feeder, and at my feeder, it's the same crowd. I don't have any new visitors. I had some pine grosbeaks a couple weeks ago. I got a note from Tim Stocker, said that he had pine grosbeaks visiting his feeder. Outside of that, it's red and white-breasted nuthatches. It's chickadees. It's all of the woodpeckers, downy, hairy, red-bellied, and pileated. Blue jays. I have a few starlings that come in. I had some grackles last month, but not very many and not very often. So, that's what January sort of looks like. But then there are some other things that January brings. One of the things that I was checking on yesterday was the development of the aspen buds. Aspens are related to willows. And you are probably familiar with the pussy willow, that little white, fluffy, fuzzy flower that appears on the willows, on the pussy willows. Aspens do the same thing. Trembling aspens and big tooth aspens, probably cottonwoods. They all have that same little furry bud that shows up. And all of the years that I've been observing, there's always been a willow or two somewhere out there that have pussy willows that have those flowers emerging in winter. Sometimes it's as early as late November, sometimes it's December, sometimes it's January, but typically January I begin to see the first furry buds. And I have these couple of early bird aspens right by my mailbox, and I went down and looked at them yesterday. They were covered in ice, and I had to knock some of the ice off, but the buds are still pretty tightly closed. Now, other years I have had those buds opening this time of year in early January and sometimes late December. So I'll be keeping an eye on them and I'll be letting you know. I don't think that it has much to do with weather because I think that the tree is just one of those early birds. The other thing that should be observable right now, alder seeds should be falling. The speckled alder, those little, they're like a little tiny pine cone. Think about a half inch long pine cone, except because it's on alder, it's not really a pine cone. It's simply the seed pod from which the seeds will fall. And this time of year, they're going to be laying on top of the new snow. And with them are going to be birch seeds. This is the time of year when the birches begin to spread their seeds. And if you're looking at the snow, you're going to see these little structures that look like a fleur de lis. They're sort of sometimes like think of a duck's foot track. And those are the bracts that separate the seeds in the pod that is the birch flower. And the seed itself is a bit like, I think of it as sort of the planet Saturn, because there's a bulb in the middle and then there's this large flat disc, large in the sense that it might be an eighth of an inch across, so it's not huge, but relative to the seed in the middle, there is this large flat disc that circles the seed like the rings of Saturn. And so if you're seeing this mess on top of your snow and you've got a birch nearby, look carefully and you'll be able to separate the bracts from the seeds. They're going to be there on top of the snow right now. This time of year, we also hear woodpeckers beginning to drum. I listened to a downy woodpecker yesterday doing its thing. It wasn't drumming. It was simply attacking some wood looking for a meal. There was some recent research done on the downy woodpecker, and the paper was a synopsis of the paper was published in Natural History magazine, and they talked about the downy woodpecker in particular and how when they're drumming, or actually any time that they're striking wood, there is a concert of muscles that start in the head and neck and then go to the hip flexors and down to the tail, and this whole symphony of muscle movements is absolutely coordinated so that the bird rears back and then strikes with amazing force, up to 30 times its body weight force on the whatever object it's trying to hit. Interestingly, the downy woodpecker grunts when he does this. And though you can't hear it, when they had these birds in the laboratory and they were watching them and recording them, they could hear the woodpecker grunt every time he struck the tree. And they can strike the tree up to 13 times a second. So they're grunting 13 times a second. Each time they hit the tree, there's this little exhale, this little grunt, and then an inhale. And they can do that 13 times a second, which if you tried to breathe in and out even once a second, in 15 seconds, you'd probably fall unconscious. It's almost an impossibility. But the woodpeckers handle it, and they should be starting to drum. This is typically, January is typically the time of year when I hear them begin to drum. Also, if you're lucky and you live in the neighborhood of cardinals, you will hear them singing as well. And they begin to sing in the wintertime. And it is about mating and territory and a lot of the same reasons that the woodpeckers are drumming. It's a way of establishing a territory. I want to talk about the chickadee, who is going to be singing its Phoebe song, and that will carry on until April. And I'm going to go into that in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you other things to look for this time of year. We had a report a text came in this morning of a skunk that was dead on the highway near Brainerd. Typically, it's a little bit later in the year that the male skunks begin to wake up. Typically, it's February, but plenty of reports in January as well of skunks waking up. These are usually the males. They go out, wander about, try to find a female and maybe mate. Hard to say whether they'll be successful in January or not, but, you know, that kind of a impetus can drive skunks into making poor decisions. And skunks, you know, have short legs. And if you're walking in deep snow, it's much easier if you get out of the deep snow onto those nicely plowed roads, which then makes you right out there where the cars are running. And chances are you'll end up as roadkill. January, I have a number of records of muskrats out running around in places they ought not to be. And I think that what's happening there is that the muskrats probably have made poor choices about the pond that they might have selected to spend the winter in. And some of those ponds will freeze right to the bottom. And once that happens, the muskrat is going to be cut off from its food source. And so it's going to have to go looking for a more suitable home. And several years now in January, I have records of muskrats wandering down highways. And I actually have a nice video of a muskrat fighting my dog. If you do come across a muskrat, they are very aggressive. And I have a 80-pound black lab. And the last time we ran into a muskrat, the muskrat leaped about 6 feet to attack the dog. And the dog moved back quickly, and I commend her for her good judgment. But don't get close to them. They have nasty teeth, and they will mess up your dog. They will mess up you if you're stupid enough to get right up to them. Be really careful. They can be very aggressive. Just a couple of notes about chickadees, because they kind of interest me. And this time of year, they're going to be starting to sing. And they have done recent research on the songs of the chickadees. They found out that both male and female chickadees sing the Phoebe song, and that the chickadees can recognize the sex of the bird singing by the type of song that they sing. For me, not so much. But for the chickadees, yes, they can. chickadees are really interesting little birds. You wonder how they can get through the winter. They cache seeds. They can remember their caches up to 28 days. The part of the brain that is spatial and focuses on memory is the hippocampus. And it is at its largest size in October. And by February, as it begins to exhaust its caches, the hippocampus starts to shrink. And come February, it is pretty small. So even though they are developing this ability to remember where they've hidden things, towards February, it gets a little bit less and less. And probably it's because they've exhausted most of their hiding places. Having feeders doubles the chance of a chickadee's survival. Just having that regular source of food for them can keep a lot of chickadees alive that would otherwise die. Chickadees are hierarchical. And that means that there is a top dog in the flock. And that top dog is going to appropriate all of the food that it wants and needs before it's going to allow any of its subservient flock members to eat. So feeding at a bird feeder sort of eliminates that threat to the lesser birds, those of lesser significance in the flock. So they are right now probably just beginning to wake up. They roost usually singly, which is kind of hard to believe because they're so tiny, and yet usually in some thick brush or maybe in a cavity, but sometimes they'll roost in groups, but mostly they roost singly. They can go into torpor. They can lower their body temperature up to 12 degrees centigrade, which is that's like 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So they can drop their body temperature down. It will keep them alive in very cold temperatures by just kind of going into this torpor and waking up from it to survive in the mornings. Quickly running through my notes, I had 7.5 inches of snow in my front yard as of January 1st, totaled 1.14 inches of water. Yesterday walking, I found a lot of white spruce needles, the 3-year-old needles off the white spruce really came down over the last couple of days. And this is an observation that I've made over a couple of years. It's not something that I can say that I have made over a long period of time. But if you have experience with white spruce and you know that this is the time of year when they typically lose their needles, I'd like to hear from you because I'm anxious to learn more about this. This is not the first year that I've seen a lot of white spruce needles laying on top of the snow in the winter. So check those out and let me know. I mentioned the trembling aspen, checking it for buds, not yet. Downy woodpeckers, black-capped chickadees, snowshoe hare. you may recall, before Christmas, we had some temperatures up near 40. I had 44 for a high one day. It put a crust on the snow that was around. And since then, we've gotten another 1.5, maybe 2 inches of snow. And the voles are kind of trapped on that layer of ice and snow, and they can't dive down and get down to the bottom of the snow column into the grasses as easily as if that ice layer were not there. What this means is that there are a lot of sort of open tunnels on the snow in my yard, and it's like looking at hieroglyphics. There are these tracks where the voles have wandered around on top of this crust of ice and in this 1.5 to 2 inch deep pile of snow, which caves in and leaves a sort of an open line there. And I don't know if it's the science fiction in me, the fantasy, or the book Charlotte's Web, I don't know, but I keep expecting the voles to maybe send me a message like that's some handsome pig or something like that. So far, I haven't been able to decipher anything the voles are doing in my yard, but I would love to have a picture if you have a vole that shows up and spells out a word or more, a sentence, please take a picture. I'd love to see it. Heard a few crows this last week, still around. This is generally, 25 years ago, I would not have expected to hear crows. 35 years ago, crows would have all gone south for the winter. Now they seem to be, at least a few are sticking around. And I went down by the lake yesterday, and I was astonished at the number of little tracks. And I suspect they're mice. I don't know which mouse it would be. But in the hummocks along the edge of the lake and in the cattails, there are all these little trails that lead across and then dive into holes and disappear. And just fascinating, just really interesting to look at. So get outside. You won't be disappointed. There's lots of stuff going on. And, hey, it's going to be really nice and warm for the next couple of days. So pack yourself a little snack and head out the door, and you will be amazed and astonished. There's lots out there.
That is Phenology here on People Powered KAXE. We broadcast to the small towns and townships of northern Minnesota, places like Marble, Swatara, Nisswa, and Cass Lake. You can join us at KAXC.org. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Coming up next, we'll have best wishes.
We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com. And support comes from the Friends of the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience. Located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
Headwaters Quilt Guild is meeting today at 6 p.m. at Stitch in Time in Bemidji, where member Donna Olson is going to share stories of her recent trip to Bali, along with her experience of making batik fabrics and teaching classes there. And this Thursday night, the classic movie series continues at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork at 6:30. Free showing of Spellbound, directed by Alfred Hitchcock and starring Ingrid Bergman and Gregory Peck.
Sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
I probably have seen that. I've watched a lot of Hitchcock movies. So.
Okay.
Long time ago, back when black and white was what you got.
Yeah.
It is time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, January 6th. We start off with John and Paula Burns celebrating their 40th anniversary in Beauvais.
And our very own Mark Jacobs from McGregor. Happy birthday to you. Mark's going to be joining us at about an hour. We'll talk more about forest products we maybe don't realize will be made in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Mark.
I wonder if the candles on his cake will be tamarack or aspen or.
And this, our next two is pretty exciting on our list.
Yes.
For birthdays.
We have Scott and Sarah Newstock, both born on the 6th of January.
Wow.
Scott is a year older than Sarah.
Okay.
And they are the parents of Axel, Rose, and Pearl, Axel, Pearl, and Ruth.
That's right.
I don't know where Rose came from, but.
And I probably fits right in.
And, yeah.
And our good friend, longtime member and contributor, Gail Blackmer from Effie. Happy birthday to you today.
Yeah, happy birthday, Gail. Janice Gustafson is 75 years old today, and Janice is celebrating in Cass Lake.
And Tammy Ingemels, happy 59th to you from Bagley.
And J.J. Johnson, J-cubed, has a birthday today in Brainerd. Happy birthday to all of you, and happy anniversary to John and Paula. And if today, or if you have a birthday or anniversary to share, you can text us at 218-326-1234.
We've got new music now from Trombone Shorty, and then we're going to be checking in with our phonology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. We'll be right back. like we're walking down the street in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, that's new music from Trombone Shorty and the New Breed Brass Band. It's released 20 years to the day after Hurricane Katrina. Second Line Sunday is a new collaboration, and it's a reflection on culture and tradition, family and community, and survival and resilience steeped in the rich New Orleans history. Music that could easily be played live on the streets of New Orleans.
Indeed, yeah. Today might be, well, I don't know, pretty nice day here in northern Minnesota. I don't know that I'd go all the way down to New Orleans for, I'm going to be pretty happy here. Temperatures are going to be approaching freezing.
That's right. Actually, we're expecting, 25 to 30 during the day today. We do have a chance of freezing rain and dense freezing fog this morning with reduced visibility. Northwest winds 5 to 15. Tonight, patchy fog, mostly cloudy, 14 to 18. Patchy fog tomorrow, but then we're going to see some sun. Highs 35 to 37 degrees.
Pretty nice. I'll take it. Support comes from the Loft Event Center in downtown Bemidji, providing a multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Event Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com.
It is time to welcome in our phonology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. Today, you know, students are just getting back to school as of yesterday, some even later, but we it was weird to have no reports coming in, so we thought let's talk to Chad Kaditz and let's get Charlie Mitchell on the horn, and here she is.
Hey, good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, you two.
Yeah, mighty early for you, I know, but hey, you'll get over it. You can take a nap.
That is my plan.
Yeah, mine too. But I plan for a nap every day because I'm old. I get to.
Well, we had such a fun conversation about an hour ago with Chad Kaditz about his kind of his origin story in phonology. And I guess it's probably shouldn't be any surprise to us that it was when he was a little kid, because his dad was a biology teacher, and, you know, all of what he's done and the lasting impact as he sees students he used to have come back and all of that. So really exciting to hear from Chad. And we're hoping maybe, John and I think this might be a cool thing to talk to teachers once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great idea. I've listened to part of Chad's interview this morning. I had no idea he did one of those illustrations every day. I thought it was every week.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I wonder just if amazing. He adds to it during the week, because then later he said every week. He has to erase it at the end of the week, so I bet he adds something new every day to it, because it's elaborate, you know?
Yeah.
You can
see, often there are five illustrations, so that would make sense.
Yeah. He posts those photos. Thankfully, his students pushed him to do that, starting the Instagram account. So that's, I would never tell someone to be on social media, but if you are, that's a good reason to do it. So you can look at nature pictures.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the things that came in, and then we'll talk about what we saw over the holiday break. But we heard from Noah in Britt. He said some observations. He said, with all the snowshoe hares around this winter, it is no surprise to find what I'm pretty sure are lynx tracks sharing my snowshoe route. Also heard the local wolves howling at the wolf moon the other night while our flying squirrel friend hid in the trees near the bird feeders.
Do you know, I was looking at events that, like, I can pick out January 6th and isolate every note that I've recorded on that date. And in 2004, I had a note I've muffed his name, Jerry Neamey, who is a professor at the University of Minnesota, or was a professor at the University of Minnesota and worked for NRRI. And they had done a study on lynx, and in 2004, they had captured 8 different lynx and had collared them and were tracking their activities in Minnesota. And prior to that, they had no real information or even records of lynx in Minnesota. And in fact, a lot of the thoughts of those times were that there were no lynx in Minnesota, that they were Canada. And here we are. All these years later, there are lynx in Minnesota. Yeah.
I did not know that. I mean, I could also see lynx being so stealthy that they could evade notice for a while.
You know, that's the thing about lynx and bobcats. You know, I have a trail cam, and I get a picture of a bobcat every month, at least. And I saw two on my mail route, and they drove a million miles. 35,000 miles a year for 30 years, or no, 30,000 miles a year for 35 years. The math's the same. It's just I had to do it five more years. But at any rate, I saw two in all that time. And yet, they are a lot more common than that.
We're also...
You know, the fascinating...
Oh, go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. The fascinating thing about bobcats and snowshoe hares... I mean, this isn't lynx and snowshoe hares, but they're a classic case in... what we call demographic biology, of like a predator's population size being determined by the availability of its prey. And so both snowshoe hares and bobcats show these like fluctuations where sometimes the population is really low, sometimes they're very high. And when the snowshoe hare's population is pretty high, the next year you see a big bounce in the bobcat population. And so, when it crashes, so does the bobcat. And so it's really cool pattern where you can see exactly how important that population is to the bobcat population, and they kind of follow each other.
You called that demographic? What was the
demographic
term?
Biology, yeah.
Okay, cool. I didn't know the term, but I knew the relationship.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of what I was studying in graduate school. It's where, like, for instance, for turtles, the age of most of the animals within a population really determines a population's health. So if you have, so since, you know, little turtles are a good snack for pretty much anything, and a big turtle has almost no natural predators, if you're looking at the health of the population, the thing that is actually driving whether the population is growing or shrinking is the number of adult turtles. Because those are the ones that are laying eggs. Those are the ones that have basically grown out of being an easy prey source. And so it's looking at, you know, kind of the different age classes of a population and how those affect the population going up or down. But then you can also look at other things like interactions with other species. Really interesting group of studies. And that's why, you know, these adult turtles getting killed on roads is such a big deal, is that these are the animals that are most important to this population's health and the ones most likely to get hit by a car.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. That time is coming, but it's not here yet.
Not yet.
It's the skunks that we have to dodge right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect, well, somebody called in this morning and said they'd smelled and saw a dead skunk on the road in Brainerd. And what else did we get? We got a note about...
We heard about owl. We got a couple different things on owls. Laura Z, we had mentioned this earlier, but she saw a snowy owl in Grand Rapids between the airport and L&M warehouse sitting on a lamppost. So maybe just go park yourself.
You know, I was in there about 2 weeks ago and looking for snowy owls because I thought, well, if they're around, this is where they'll be.
Yeah.
I did not see any, but I'll go home that way, so I make sure to check again.
All right. And then we also just got a photo and a text, and someone asking, what kind of owl is this? Charlie, what do you see there?
It's a barred owl.
Okay.
Ah.
And the way I can recognize it is if you look at the chest of the barred owl, some of the little stripes go sideways and some of them go vertically. And that's the only owl in Minnesota that has that pattern.
That's because their mom told them never do that. I've been warned by my wife not to wear a shirt that's striped horizontally with pants that are striped vertically. That's not, she said, no, you can't go out like that. Who's going to complain? The dog? You know, maybe at least the barred owl would be like, that guy's cool. Look at him.
Yep.
He's got it down. Yeah. Barred owls are sort of crepuscular. They're nocturnal, but not like the great horned owl. You'll see barred owls during the day, and especially in the wintertime, maybe early evening or early morning, you'll see them out and active, but not going to happen with a great horned owl. They're absolutely waiting for darkness before they get out and start moving around.
Do they breed a little bit later than the great horns, or is it around the same time?
No, okay. It's probably a month or so later that they are actually nesting. But the great horned owl, February, would you like to be sitting on a nest in February? No, thank you. Yeah, exactly. Pretty cold. And the female doesn't leave the nest. And that's something I didn't mention about the chickadees when I was talking about them. That's the case with the chickadee as well. She does not leave the nest once she begins to incubate. She stays on the birds, on the babies, until they are fledging. And then she will, at least until they're being really demanding and don't need the attention of a mother all the time. But they both are chained to the nest, as it were, when they have babies, the females, and they're dependent on their mate to bring them food. And so selecting a mate that is one life-determining event.
Mm-hmm. I
gotta wonder whether, that is, kind of hanging out on the couch, whether that's a pleasant break. You get to sit back, have your food brought to you, no predators are likely coming into that nest, or whether it is kind of cabin fever, I'm stuck here for way too long.
I know what it would be for me. I'm starving. When is that SOB going to show up with my lunch? He said noon and it's 1:30. Where is he? Yeah, I don't know if I could do it.
We just had another text come in to 218-326-1234. Jamie from Bemidji said this weekend was the Beltrami Island, Bidette, and Roseau Christmas bird counts.
Ooh.
She participated in the Beltrami Island on Friday in the brutal cold. I was rewarded by my first spruce grouse sighting, watched it feed and scoot across the road, also saw a snowshoe hare. So no mention of birds.
Well,
in the bird count there.
The grouse,
spruce,
right?
Spruce grouse.
Oh, yes. What am I saying? Of course.
That's that would be, I haven't seen a spruce grouse in probably as long as I haven't seen a snowy owl. I did see some spruce grouse when I was in Canada camping one time. They frequented the latrine and pulled the toilet paper out and dragged it into the woods. So it was disgusting. Yeah.
So, Charlie, did you get outside during the holiday break?
Well, I went to California to visit my in-laws, and so I was definitely outside a lot there. That was pleasant. I went from, going through the tide pools and catching little crabs in the morning to arriving home at midnight to 5-degree weather in the cities, which I know is nothing to you guys, but the transition